Good afternoon to everyone. I apologize again. I'll try to make it up to you. The good news is that Mariv, my colleague Ben Kaspit, reported today that Shimon Peres has been working on a back channel with President Abbas. When he met with President Obama a few weeks ago, they have discussed some ideas, and as far as I know, Prime Minister Netanyahu was part of this initiative, and of course Shimon Peres, the president, wouldn't have put on the table anything without consulting the Prime Minister, even though we know, Shimon, that if we could ask Yitzhak Rabin, he could tell us one or two things about how Shimon operates. But in this case, I understand that he's been consulting the Prime Minister. So the message that comes out today from Jerusalem is that September might not be September, which means that the Palestinians and the Israelis may still go back to the negotiating table. As you know, the issue of the settlements is still a precondition. I mean, the moratorium is still a precondition of the Palestinian, but once the 67 lines, the June 4, 67 lines, will be the basis of the terms of reference for the negotiations, the Palestinians might be more flexible, and we may see an attempt to reach a settlement. I'm not very optimistic, but the Palestinians, the PLO, 2 days ago, I wonder why I didn't see anything about this in the news, actually have accepted the basic lines that President Obama has put forward in his two recent presentations, both at the State Department and in AIPAC, which is the 67 lines as the starting point. And this is very important. He keeps saying, and people don't want to listen, that the 67 lines is not the end game. The 67 lines is the beginning, and the final borders have to be agreed upon, which means there is a possibility of swap. And he didn't even say that it has to be symmetric. So Netanyahu has a room, if he likes, or if you like, he doesn't have an excuse not to enter the negotiations. The other thing is the reconciliation between the Fatah and Hamas. If you listen carefully, President Obama said that Israel is not expected to negotiate with an organization that doesn't accept previous agreements and doesn't recognize Israel. But Israel is not supposed to negotiate with Hamas. Our partners, according to Oslo Agreement, our partner is the PLO, not even the PA. So once they will form a government that will include only technocrats, and as far as I know, it was reported today in Haaretz, President Abbas insists that the Prime Minister will still be Salam Fayyad. So this excuse is also off the table. The other things, like what Netanyahu said about the Jordan Valley as the security border, this is, again, it's not a precondition. It's Netanyahu may say whatever he wants on Jerusalem or on the Jordan Valley, but at the same token, the Palestinians can also put on the table whatever they think is appropriate. So the The idea is how to get them back to the table. I think that President Obama is not very optimistic about the results. But once they will start the negotiations, at least we will know what exactly Prime Minister Netanyahu had in mind in Bar-Ilan 2 years ago when he spoke about a two-state solution. So that's number one. The other thing is the demand of Netanyahu that the Palestinians will accept the idea of Israel as the as a Jewish state, or the exclusively the state of the Jewish people. If this is a precondition, that is the real problem. What he said in the Congress, that six prime ministers have tried to reach an agreement and they failed because of the refusal of the Palestinians to spell out the magic words that they recognize Israel as a Jewish state, is completely false, because nobody, first of all, there were only two prime ministers. You know, when he mentioned six, he included himself as the prime in his first term and second term, and as far as we know, he never really negotiated the final settlement with the Palestinians. But Barak and Olmert, who did try to reach a settlement, never demanded that the Palestinians will recognize Israel as a Jewish state. So when President Obama said that the United States, or he himself, recognizes Israel as a Jewish state, he didn't say that he expects the Palestinians to do the same. In I don't know if you know, I have been one of I'm a member of the IPI, the Israeli Peace Initiative group, with Yuval Rabin and Yaakov Peri and Amnon Lipkin-Shahak and others, and even Dalin Gilerman is in our group. What we have suggested in our formula is that the language will be that the Israelis and the Palestinians agree that the settlement will be based on the idea that Israel will define itself as a Jewish state. Israel will define itself as a Jewish state, and the Palestinians will define themselves as a Palestinian state. We presented it to President Abbas a few weeks ago, and he said on record, it was an answer to Ethan Bruner from the New York Times, that if Netanyahu would have accepted the IPI formula, he would go back immediately back to the negotiating table and will put on hold the unilateral recognition of the Palestinian state at the UN. A failure to go back to the negotiations and a showdown in September, I think that even Netanyahu realizes that, will play right into the hands of the Hamas. They will be able to prove to the Palestinian people that the PLO has been wrong and they have been right all the way, that the political option has never been realistic, and the West Bank, instead of turning Gaza to a flourish area like the West Bank, it may go the other way around. We'll be missing a great opportunity now to take advantage of the split inside the Hamas between Mashal, who realized that he lost his partner. He lost his main supporter, which is Bashar Assad, who I think is at the end of the countdown to the end of his regime. I think Hassan Nasrallah made a big mistake when he, a couple of days ago, I think it was even yesterday, when he stood behind and gave the backing to Bashar Assad. And this is the time for Israel to take advantage of this and to reach an agreement with the Fatah that is now dictating the rules to the Hamas, and first and foremost that they will have to hand over their weapons in Gaza, and the fact that the Egyptians are opening Rafah takes away the threat of another flotilla, and the onus on Israel in regard to the crisis in Gaza Strip.
Akiva, let's give our participants a chance to ask questions. I would ask people who would like to ask a question to press *6 now and unmute themselves that way, and go ahead and ask your question. Is there anyone who would like to ask a question? Again, to do so, please press *6 and go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, before you came online, Akiva, we discussed this very question about the definition of the Jewish state, and I think what you've said is very important, that maybe that will be a matter of who decides what they are without asking the other side whether they accept what you are. So that's the key.
Which means self-determination.
Yes.
In other words, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that just keep in mind that we have signed a peace agreement with two Arab countries that were never expected to recognize Israel as a Jewish state, since everybody is aware of the sensitivity to the when it comes to recognizing with the history and the fact that we have 20% of our population is not Jewish.
Right, right. You mentioned Mishal. Would you feel that he has lost a lot of influence compared to Haniyeh, for example?
Absolutely. I think that, no, it's more Mahmoud Azahar versus Khaled Mashal. The fact that Khaled Mashal went to Egypt to sign this agreement, if you read the website of Hamas, and even in their interviews, the conflict and the even I would even say the crisis and the split is out there in the air in the on the internet and in the newspapers between the two camps, one camp that supports the reconciliation and is willing to go for elections and gave up their demand, and even allowing the PLO to proceed with their initiative to the recognition of the Palestinian state in the 67 borders. And for the Hamas, this is, I think, a big concession.
Again, if you'd like to ask a
possible,
question. Yes, go ahead, please.
Is it possible to change the wording of the 67 borders? I think that's a buzzword that no one hears beyond that, and that's what you were saying, Akiva. There is really only a beginning for the negotiations, but nobody hears that. Is there any possibility that it could be worded differently but mean the same thing?
Well, the wording, the difference is between a Palestinian state in the 67 borders and the Palestinian state or a two-state solution based on the 67 lines.
This
should be the wording. The wording that actually President Obama suggested is the second one, that it will be based on the 67 lines with a mutual agreement on the final borders. So, as I said before, that this the 67 lines In other words, what it means, and this is a process that it took a while for Ehud Barak and Ehud Olmert to understand, is to accept the idea that the 22% of the mandatory Palestine doesn't belong to us. It belongs to the Palestinians. So if you, what they need to hear is that Israel recognizes that the West Bank and Gaza and East Jerusalem are Palestinian occupied territories. And they are offering us a gesture by their willingness to swap parts of those territories that the international law, in their view, and the international consensus recognizes those territories as Palestinian territories. So it's not that we are doing them a favor by giving them territories, okay? It's the,
yes.
The Palestinians want Israel and the international community to admit and to recognize that those territories belong to them. And they actually made the big concession already in 88, in the Algiers Declaration, when they gave up, from their point of view, the 78%.
Yes, I know. What could be done to make the explanation you just gave more known to the international community and to Israelis, for that matter? It does not appear very much, or only by innuendo, in our papers and discussions and so forth, that 22% was a grant from Palestine, from the Palestinians.
Yeah. Well, you know, how many people remember that the roadmap that was submitted by no other than the Republican President Bush to Israel and to Ariel Sharon is calling Israel to completely freeze the settlements and remove all the outposts that took ground since 2001. And this was adopted by the Security Council after the United States submitted it. And how many people are aware of the fact that Israel is violating a UN resolution and an American official position that was a bipartisan initiative? Of course, the Democrats supported it. The problem is that people are comparing Netanyahu 2011 to Netanyahu 96, or to Netanyahu, what Netanyahu says in May 2011 to what he said in Bar-Ilan, including my colleagues, and they're very excited to find that there are some nuances and it seems that he's moving forward. And let me tell you, the problem is that the Palestinians don't care, because they are looking back to Oslo, to 93, and they're saying, well, it's none of our business that Israel, that first they have assassinated Rabin, and since then there have been five prime ministers that are starting all over from scratch after each elections. So this is a problem. We say, you know, there is a new reality. The Israeli public opinion is moving to the right, and we have Lieberman, and this is the political reality, and we have to live with that. And so we are losing the perspective of, for instance, what I just said, of that history doesn't start with the given elections, the last elections in Israel.
Indeed.
And this is, I think, this is your job. This is my job to keep reminding my readers and your audience and the Jewish community that there are different facts than those that Netanyahu decided to put forward this serial standing ovation comedy.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 6. We will go on for another 10 to 15 minutes because Akiva joined us a little late. Those of you who are willing to stay, of course, are welcome to stay. And again, to ask a question, please press star 6.
Akiva. This is Robbie.
Hello? Hi.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes, I wanted to ask regarding the resolution in September in the United Nations. I understood that the way that it's going to be presented is in a way that America can veto it. Or is it in a way that America can veto it so it's meaningless?
Well, in order to recognize a state and give it meaning, you need a Security Council resolution where the United States has a veto. But the Palestinians are aware of the fact that Obama may veto it, so they are looking at the General Assembly, where there is nobody has a veto there, including the United States. And here they are hoping. Right now they have around 120 or even more countries that are recognizing a Palestinian state in the 67 borders. The key is Europe, because they have Latin America. They have, of course, all the Muslim countries and some other countries in the third world in Africa. But what the key is Germany, Great Britain, and France. And I don't know if you followed the news today, the G8 has dropped the resolution to follow Obama's statement regarding the Palestinian state in the 67 lines, since the Canadian actually vetoed it, and the G7 takes decisions unanimously in consensus. And there was, because of the Canadian, they had to give up. So what the Palestinians are now focusing on is not the Security Council because of the veto, but the General Assembly. Which has a symbolic significance rather than legal one.
I'm sorry, somehow you got disconnected when you started the answer. The point is, can they get a recognition or not in September?
Well, they can get a symbolic recognition, but facts on the ground are not going to change. Only the Security Council can impose it, has the power to impose a resolution. So...
But mentally, they can get it. The America can veto it. Am I right?
The Americans can veto it only in the Security Council. They don't have the veto power in the General Assembly.
Oh, that's what they wanted. So they will take it to
and
the General Assembly.
That's what they want right now. Right. They are going to submit it to the General Assembly.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Do we have another question?
Hi, Mark Silverberg.
Yes, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, it's from Mark. Two questions. Akiva, do you believe that the September vote with the General Assembly, let's say they get a lot of votes, that would be used by Israel as a pretext for unilateral actions that not only undermine the move towards two-state solution and diplomacy, but also create a dangerous situation regarding possibility of uprisings like the protests on Nakba Day, more nonviolent protests by Palestinians?
Well, the Palestinians are getting ready for a nonviolent struggle they have been working on it for a while. And they are hoping that it's will be followed by the same kind of demonstrations in Tahrir Square, in Tunisia, and in Jordan and elsewhere, and will create a pressure on the international community, first and foremost the United States, to impose the General Assembly resolution on Israel. And they are working very hard trying to make sure that it will not get out of control, because they know that the Israeli security forces can deal with violence, but they will have a problem dealing with a kind of a Tahrir Square or a Syrian protest, because you don't expect the Israeli government to react like Bashar Assad, or not even as Mubarak did. So Israel is expected to respect other kind of international values and conduct, code of conduct. So they know that everybody will be watching the Israelis, and the problem is that it might get out of control, and I'm quite sure that if it will start in Nablus, it will not end in Nablus. Like in 2000, in October 2000, this will be a snowball that will go all the way to the Galilee, to Jaffa, Haifa, and all other areas where you have the what you have is mixed cities, and it may put the whole area in fire.
Akiva, this is Frank Bamberger. Did you put any credence into the very long article of David Horowitz's in the Jerusalem Post Monday, suggesting the UN resolution would go could go much further than just giving the Palestinians observer status, going much further in because there is a UN resolution, he says, that hasn't been sufficiently noticed, that will be used here by the Palestinians to make much more of it than just a symbolic gesture. Did you see that article, and did you give credence? Do you give credence to it or not?
Not to this article, but I have discussed this issue of the legal aspects of the resolution with experts on international law. What they're saying is that the from their point of view, the significance might be that Israeli officers might be in deep trouble, those who are serving in the occupied territories. For instance, if we will have another Goldstone report after the resolution, it will be very different than the current situation. But look, the 67 lines, and I've discussed it also with ministers, are completely irrelevant today. Take, for instance, if you want to go from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, you will cross the occupied territories. Not even, I'm not talking about the 443 highway. I'm talking about Highway 1, the main road that is crossing the Latrun Road, that did not exist before 67. There are Jewish neighborhoods in East Jerusalem that were built on a no-man's land, like Ramat Eshkol and part of Ramot. What about Gilo and all the other Jewish neighborhoods? Forget about the West Bank, the settlements in the West Bank, just talking about what we believe is Jerusalem, since the Israeli law has been applied to them. So what do you do with around a quarter of a million people who live in Jerusalem? So what do you do in regard to sharing resources, natural resources such as water? What do you do about airspace? Even the Palestinians, I have a document that here that they have drafted in regard to this initiative, and what they're saying is that the recognition is not intended to replace negotiations. What they believe is that right after there will be the recognition, Israel will have to go back to the to negotiate all those details, because it is going to be just a declaration that even for people from Peace Now, it will be impossible to draw the line if we don't sit down with the Palestinians and decide on swap and how to divide the no man's land. So it will be completely not practical. I know for sure that Shimon Peres was trying to convince Netanyahu to reach some kind of an agreement that will not tie him completely to the 67 lines, but will at the same time allow Abu Mazen to go back to the negotiations. And that's why Obama has decided to spend 2 hours with him. I don't think that the president would have wasted his time just for niceties. And Shimon Peres wouldn't have spent so much time with us discussing all the nitty-gritties of our document. So what Netanyahu was doing in the Congress, if you want to look at it in a conspirative way, was perhaps to cover what was actually happening in back channels. That's the only way to look at it.
Then he's going to look like a fool.
To pay some lip service, you
That's
know, to his colleagues and in the United States and in the Jewish community in AIPAC and in Israel, and then to come back to Israel with flying colors and then go back to reality. That's the only way. I agree with you that we should take it with more than one grain of salt.
And can I ask you one other thing? I understand Fayyad has had yet another heart attack. Do you know what his health is and whether his health will weigh at all on what's going on vis-a-vis peace negotiations, what might be peace negotiations?
I don't know that he had another one in while he was in hospital. I know that he got a heart attack while he was in the hospital, and then he got a bypass, a few bypasses. And you know, some of my best friends have been living many years with that. So as far as I know, he didn't give up.
Tell him to give up. Okay.
He's still interested. I just 2 days ago spoke to his assistant, and he was still very concerned about the pressure from Hamas to replace Abbas, to replace Fayyad.
Akiva, I think we will make this question by Marianne Stein our last question. Maybe I'll ask you to do one last thing before we let you go, and that is just if you could talk to us a little bit about the future plans of the Israeli Peace Initiative. What are your plans in terms of advancing that initiative?
We met last week. I was in Cairo, and we met. We were invited by the foreign minister. And we will try, since this is the first time that Israelis are putting forward a regional initiative in response to the Arab Peace Initiative, and Nabil and Arabi told us, where have you been for 9 years since they launched their initiative? And what we are interested is, we discussed it with him, is to start some kind of mechanism of people-to-people or track-to between us, the Israeli Peace Initiative, and the Arab League. And since he's going, he was already selected as the new Secretary General, we hope that once it will take another few weeks before they will find a replacement for him, that he will take over Amr Moussa, and we hope to establish some kind of a mechanism and communication, lines of communication between us, and because right now it's not symmetric, as he said, that we are not even an NGO. We are a group of people, very respected people. You know, we have a former chief of staff, a former head of Mossad, two former head of Shin Bet. We have former ambassador to the UN and to the EU, Avi Primor, and I think all the leading, and Shimon Shamir was ambassador to Egypt and to first ambassador to Jordan, and some of the leading businessmen. But what we also do, and we started already a campaign, and unlike the other group of Rakhlevsky and the others who, and Avram Burg, who are calling to recognize a Palestinian state unilaterally by Israel, that Israel should be the one, we are still, our tactics, maybe even our strategy, is to try and push the government back to the table and keep calling them at the last minute to do something in order to avoid the showdown in September. And we follow the news very closely every day, and once we realize that it's a waste of time and waste of energy, we will become more aggressive. But right now, the strategy, since the difference between us and Geneva is, I think, the fabric of the IPI includes people from the mainstream, which have, unfortunately, you know, I have a problem spending time with people from the mainstream, but I realize that perhaps this is the only way to change the mood in Israel and to move the public opinion to the right direction. So we are doing it very carefully, not to get the image of the usual suspects. So we are trying to be different. We even asked Meretz not to endorse us.
Akiva, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us. Despite the emergency that you had at your home, I'd like to wish your granddaughter a rapid recovery. I'd like to also thank everyone who's on the line for joining us and for your patience, for bearing with us. A recording of this conversation will be available on our website soon.